Well, to our listeners at home, we here at Anime Was Not a Mistake are currently entering our fourth season.
I didn't think this was possible. Don't look at me.
We are just glad to be here. Mm. You know, the stay of execution has been given for now, and yeah. We are moving on to our, you know, again, what is technically our fourth season, mm-hmm. or our fourth story arc, as it were.
To think we can go from FBI Most Wanted to podcast celebrities overnight. America truly is the land of opportunity.
Of course it is. Last season, perfectly fitting in with fall, Jonathan was the curator for Over the Garden Wall.
Yes.
I believe it was 6 episodes total, we mm-hmm. walked through that series, mm-hmm. and Jonathan amazingly gave us tons of history and trivia facts and plenty of insight into how that show was made, mm-hmm. how people reacted to that show, and, you know, just how we felt about that show. When that was first being proposed, Jonathan offered if I wanted to do something, my own brief, mm-hmm. you know, yeah. take the training wheels off the bike and you know,
and watch my boy fly,
go down the hills here, yes. You know, the Full House San Francisco hill,
yeah, a la Kung Pao rolling around like the dead baby, bye bye baby,
and as it were, soon after that, I think in the planning phase of this. The Criterion Collection announced that they were going to be re-releasing the Showa-era films on a massive Blu-ray collection.
Oh, Spine 1000. Oh, yeah. I'm moist.
And it was, I was too, and it was pretty amazing. Unlike Jonathan, I've only invested in a few Criterion Collection, mainly a few Kurosawa films, mm-hmm. and of course this granddaddy Godzilla collection. Yeah. This collection comprises the 15 Showa-era Godzilla films, which were released from 1954 to 1975. These films, it's called the Showa era because that was the reigning emperor of Japan, mm-hmm. for that stretch of time, I believe until the mid-80s. But this saga of the Godzilla franchise ended in 75. Now, of course, I will not be doing 15 episodes. That would probably test all of your patience.
No, what patience?
But again, when this was first proposed, we were in the middle of our director versus director, mm-hmm. Mamoru Hosoda, Satoshi Kon, mm-hmm. The clash that splits the heavens, mm-hmm. Story arc, which
and
was
this
8
friendship
episodes
apart.
Of course,
never forget.
But spoilers, we did recover.
Yes.
So I figured 8 episodes would be a reasonable amount, if that is still possible.
I deem it possible.
what is the approval rating?
You have my boon.
They are tolerated. Yes.
Yes.
So I have chosen 8 of these 15 films to walk you guys through. Of course, I would say that 5 of them probably follow, you know, a very loose, if you will, character arc together. Mm-hmm. So if we hit the 5th one and people are burning their Anime Was Not a Mistake merchandise in the streets and Jonathan is exhausted, then we can certainly stop there. But mm-hmm. otherwise, after that point, I will have a back 3 of films that I'm just personally excited to talk about on this podcast because...
Well, why would I deny you that opportunity?
Of course. Well, thank you.
Our fans would let us... We want to hear you speak, Dan. That
thank
beautiful
you.
Voice.
La la la.
Yes, my angel of music.
But that's pretty much what we're going to be doing for this season.
Yes.
I'm going to walk us through a very large stretch of Godzilla history here. Mm. And again, you know, one of the things that Godzilla is famous for are these, you know, multitude of sequels. You know, Toho, the film studio responsible, had a number of monster features back in the day. Sometimes they would cross over, you know, sometimes they would borrow from other, you know, film studios, as would be the case with, you know, King Kong versus Godzilla.
The only one of the canon that I've seen.
And we will be watching it is there.
It was long ago.
But ultimately, the episode today is kind of the cornerstone for all of it, because no matter which of the first three eras of Godzilla films you're watching.
The one that started it all.
Yes, and be it the Showa era or the Heisei era that lasted throughout the 1990s.
Heisei?
I don't know. Heisei. Oh, okay. You're doing an Abbott and Costello thing here. We're not none of that now. And then the Millennium era, which was post 2000 until it ended prior to the release of Shin Godzilla. All three of those eras treat this first film as canon.
Okay.
So before we dive into this, mm-hmm. do we have any anime or life news to cover? As always.
Well, life news. It's the same.
Mm-hmm.
Anime news. I spent too much on anime recently, Dad. I bought that Kill la Kill full set on Blu-ray, and she's coming December 24th.
Oh, just in time for Christmas.
I doubt I'll get it by Christmas, mm-hmm. maybe because with the free economy shipping that I had to get. But yeah, I keep saying I have to save money, and lo and behold, I keep buying things, so I may have an internet shopping addiction, Dan. Somebody help me.
Just the other night we had a conversation about the Final Fantasy VII Remake Deluxe Splatoon Edition.
With Doll Boy Cloud, which originally on this podcast I deemed as a pre-order, but quickly, 2 weeks after, I realized this was not a good purchase.
Yeah, so I
settled for the Deluxe, and then Best Buy just revealed an amazing pouch that I simply had to have.
Yeah.
What can I put in that pouch? So many things.
All your hopes and dreams.
All my treasures in that pouch.
But I will also be going with the Deluxe Edition, but because there's a certain thrill, I think, of getting those things. I don't know, but, it's... You know, we have our vices, obviously, but it's just on the way here, I purchased a Godzilla figure, found one.
It was a purchase for the podcast.
It was, I'll write it off as it on the expense card.
We needed it.
But but again, it's there are worse things we could do.
Yes, so. Thank you for the grease olive branch that you just extended. Also, you're into Promare. I say watch it, right? I haven't seen it, the movie.
I have not watched it.
Is it out in theaters? I was researching a little bit last night because it looks interesting.
I know nothing, but I keep seeing people post artwork from it, and it looks good. Gorgeous.
It's another Trigger, Studio Trigger thing.
Yeah.
So,
I mean...
I'm into it.
Yeah.
Yep.
I'll try to find it then.
Yeah, I think it's a movie. I don't know if it's a series.
That would make sense.
Yeah, I wasn't sure either, but I looked a little bit into it last night, and it's not released yet.
Yeah.
It's a comment. And then... The Madoka Magica new anime is coming soon. I think in January it premieres on Crunchyroll. So I'm excited for that. It's based on the novellas or video games or something, but it's in the same universe. Mm-hmm. And you know how much I love Madoka Magica.
Of course.
So I will surely give this a watch.
Yeah.
And that's about all the anime news I got.
Well, I mean...
Oh, we have the Game Awards. Yes.
Yeah,
I forget?
It was anime adjacent.
Well, and they weren't the best awards, but they did reveal something that I love, my second favorite series, Bravely Default, 2 lowercase i's, which we can only assume is 2, even though we had Bravely Second as a sequel to the first game. But I assume that they're returning to the original style of combat, which people slightly preferred. Mm-hmm. But I do love those games a lot. I love the art design. I have all the soundtracks. It's quirky, stupid anime humor.
Mm-hmm.
And I love them both. Yeah, and it's my classic, like, Final Fantasy job mechanics.
Yeah.
I like a job, except when I'm working it in the real world.
Of course. Yeah, well, I mean, don't we all?
A job.
And I also got No More Heroes 3, which was a very anime preview.
That scary alien.
with the very clearly Digimon reference plot, like, right down to that voice of that little creature, I feel like was referencing Digimon.
Yeah.
So I'm excited for that.
Mm-hmm.
We got Ghost of Tsushima coming out.
Looks very good. And then Sekiro 1. So it's the year of the weeb.
It is.
Do the Game Awards even count, though?
I don't know.
I don't know. And here's Dwayne The Rock Johnson. No, wait, who was it? It was...
Well, the Muppets were there.
The Muppets were there. And then who's in the Fast and Furious franchise? Vin Diesel.
Vin Diesel, yeah.
Vin Diesel was there. I don't know why I confused Dwayne and him. But that was awkward, but the Muppets were in an untitled Goose Game, so we all were a little bit happier.
The camera panned across the audience, and a guy was asleep.
Yeah, and Norman Reedus is like, what the hell is going on? But he looks to Kojima, and he's like, all right.
Grimes was there.
Oh, and Reggie had a Mother 3 pin on.
Mm-hmm. They know what they're doing. They always
tormenting me, Bond. beyond his job now.
Yeah, it's beyond his power.
Right, so. Now he's just doing it on purpose, despite me. I'll never see Mother 3, will I?
Who's to say?
I don't know. Well, that's my... Oh, we have got a Steven Universe episode tonight, too. Yeah. So we've got to hurry up this recording and better hope it doesn't take 10 hours so we can catch it.
It shouldn't. No, I'll try to to get us, but again, I believe we covered that last week, but it has been excellent so far.
Yes, we did. One can only presume we get a full episode tonight.
If we can only be so lucky.
I don't know. We'll let the cards decide, Dan.
Oh, boy.
All right.
Well, someday we'll do Yu-Gi-Oh! Too.
But... With that... Oh, Yu-Gi-Oh! Mm-hmm. Oh, don't tempt me. My wallet's right over there. I could go buy it right now. But with that, let's get this kaiju train rolling.
Yeah.
Does that work? Is that we're a not good doing, transition?
Yeah, no, it does. Because I was going to say Kaiju Christmas, but there is a TV channel.
Yeah.
But there is a TV channel that already does Kaiju Christmas, so I don't think I can steal that from them.
They'll be honest.
Many ideas I had for this stretch. Like, I was going to draw Godzilla mm-hmm. as a Totoro logo for our artwork, but someone's done that. Wow. People have done, I mean, but again, it goes to show Ghibli's huge, Godzilla's huge.
This relates to anime?
These things tend to spill over. Mm-hmm. But either way, I am very excited to start this journey with y'all, and hopefully you find it interesting too. all of the information that I have here comes from like Wikipedia and TV Tropes. A little bit from the Godzilla wiki occasionally, and I also found some extra info in, if I can plug a YouTube channel, the Overly Sarcastic Productions Trope Talk video. My friend yesterday sent me a video they did covering kaiju and their relation to symbolism that I wanted to, it made some excellent points, so I wanted to reference them, and well, when the time comes, I'll properly give them due credit. I integrated that into the history. I will without further ado, I'll push us into the Monster Island segment, which
look,
is
Dan, Monster Island. Yes. The plane, it's in the ocean.
The loosely canonical location in the Godzilla universe where all the monsters live eventually.
In peace.
Yeah, for the most part, actually. That will be the replacement for Drawing Board Coon for this stretch of time. But he is still there. He's still curating this. Yeah,
he's training on Monster Island.
Of course, yeah. He's always with us. And as our pseudo-mascot. For Godzilla, our very first movie, the story of this film begins in 1954. Japanese studio Toho was planning to produce a film titled In the Shadow of Glory. The film would have been a Japanese-Indonesian co-production focusing on the aftermath of the Japanese occupation of Indonesia. So it presumably would have been some kind of post-war drama epic film.
Yeah, something I could see myself starring in.
Of course, yes. Yeah. The title is right.
On a boat, hair blowing. In the wind.
In the blank of blank is a movie that you would have optioned. but that's neither here nor we can't.
A radish in the snow.
Focus on the past. So Toho would have worked directly with the Indonesian studio Perfini and would have filmed on location in Jakarta. There was obviously still a great deal of anti-Japanese sentiment in Indonesia after, obviously the occupation. Protests started, people started pushing the government to reject the filmmakers' visas, and eventually that did happen. And this was kind of a letdown for Toho in numerous ways, because In the Shadow of Glory would have also kind of opened their markets throughout Southeast Asia, because they didn't have a foothold in any of the film markets there up until that point. So, obviously, and it would have also have been Toho's first production, because they had added resources that would have been filmed in color, which not even the final Godzilla film itself is. Because this was kind of, a huge deal for them, Toho sent their producer Tomoyuki Tanaka to Indonesia in an attempt to renegotiate the deal, but he was turned down, couldn't get any visas approved, so this project was pretty much dead in the water. On the flight home, however, Tanaka first conceived of the idea to make a giant monster movie instead. His main inspiration was the 1953 film The Beast from 20,000 Fathoms. And if anyone is familiar with it, that is one of the Ray Harryhausen's favorite stop-motion monsters. Mm-hmm. It was a creature that... I believe that was one of the ones that used stop motion. Mm. It was one of the classic examples of that trend in filmmaking. And there was also a very recent real life basis as well. In March 1954, the crew of the Japanese fishing boat Lucky Dragon 5 were exposed to nuclear fallout from the United States Castle Bravo thermonuclear weapon test at Bikini Atoll. This incident was, again, obviously covered extensively by Japanese media throughout that entire year, both before, during, and, concurrently and after the film's production. So this was, understandably, very present in the media. Mm-hmm. And as... The overly sarcastic production's Trope Talk video pointed out, immediately after World War II, obviously, and the horrific bombings of Hiroshima and Nagasaki, for about 7 years, the Japanese media was not actually allowed to cover the bombings or things related thereof. It was kind of because the U.S. was still occupying the country, and there was basically censorship in place to not cover wartime topics, to not cover the bombings, to not cover things related to, hydrogen bomb, etc. Mm-hmm. So at this point, that that phase of censorship had kind of ended, and in theory, a movie could now be made that covered that subject matter. And at the time, it was a very common trope for the sci-fi monster movies coming out of America that radiation was involved somehow. You can think of countless examples such as Them, and many others where, science goes awry, a creature is mutated into a giant version of itself, and a scientist has to undo what science did and comes out the hero. So generally they figured that would be something, a reasonable project to do. And Tanaka wrote up a spec script, basically on the remainder of his flight. When he returned to Japan, he pitched it to executive producer Iwao Mori, who then approved the project. Special effects director Eiji Tsuburaya agreed to do the film's effects. And Tsuburaya is, he is a mainstay throughout the majority of the Godzilla franchise. He is the man who originated, the vast majority of techniques we see on screen and, of this kind of... The tokusatsu genre in Japan with special effects and people in suits and things like that was already happening at the time, but obviously Godzilla has always been one of the first things that pops into people's minds when they think about that, or one of the oldest examples. So a lot of that can be credited to him. And Mori especially felt that Tsuburaya was a perfect fit for this because... they had just instituted a new storyboarding system that lent itself to special effects features, or special effects heavy features.
Yes.
The director, who ended up being the director, Ishiro Honda, was not necessarily the studio's first choice to direct this piece. However, he eventually agreed to direct the film, unlike many other directors who were optioned for it, including what would have been the original director of In the Shadow of Glory, because obviously, with the way sci-fi films were viewed, it was, there was the potential for it to be goofy. There was potential for it to be
nice
stupid and
movie,
and critically savaged, and not many were willing to jump on that. But Ishiro Honda, having had, very traumatic wartime experience of his own, he had personally seen the devastation wrought by, the bombings of Hiroshima and Nagasaki on his way home from war, actually. It made him a perfect fit for kind of tackling the film's themes. And I think if there was always an underlying, plan to tackle nuclear fallout and radiation and things like that, then Honda definitely saw the potential to tell a very serious story.
Mm-hmm.
From that point on, the film began production under a classified status, and it was referred to as Project G for Giant. They mm-hmm. still hadn't come up with the Godzilla name yet. And again, understanding that, you know, the genre was not always taken seriously, you know, Honda and his production staff wanted to make the film as realistic as possible and make it more comparable to a documentary than a standard monster movie.
Interesting.
And if you think, like, nowadays, how many sci-fi or, mm-hmm. try to, like, embody this and do a kind of poor job of it.
Cloverfield.
Yeah. Well, yeah. No, definitely yeah. Cloverfield. Yeah. Cloverfield, I would say, is one of the, you know, cardinal sinners mm-hmm. in that department. Mm-hmm. But, you know, be it monsters or disasters, a lot of films attempt to maybe take this approach, yeah. but mm-hmm. end up, you know, obviously giving way to human drama and things like that. Following along this path, the monster of the film would then be developed accordingly as a symbol of nuclear holocaust. The monster's rampage would purposely evoke the previous atomic bombings that Japan had suffered through. You know, and again, this was the first time in a while that many Japanese filmgoers would see these things discussed, even if they had suffered the traumatic events themselves. They had not gotten to see a lot of fictional stuff that, you know, delved into it. You know, because within the Godzilla canon, World War II still happened, the bombings still happened, so Godzilla is not a replacement of those bombings, he is another bombing, he is another
reminder
nuclear.
Or like, you know, an avatar for it,
yeah,
brought
yeah.
to life, yeah.
Yeah, he is a second nuclear incident, he is the ever-present potential for that to happen again, because mankind can. So, you know, Tamaka noted that the story's main theme would be, you know, the terror of the bomb. Mankind had created the bomb, and now nature was going to take revenge on mankind. And sure enough, when we watched the movie, you know, the scenes of devastation and victims in hospitals and everything else, the infrastructure falling apart, could have easily taken place in, you know, a dramatic retelling of the bombings or any disaster movie, because, you know, they don't even have Godzilla present in those moments, but we can feel what's going on. Unlike many other monsters of this era, Godzilla is not a direct creation of nuclear energy. You know, again, we were used to ant gets exposed to, mm-hmm. to fallout.
Grow big.
Big giant ant, yeah. Then giant ant dies. Instead, Godzilla is an existing creature who was in some kind of dormant state under the ocean, and was awoken and scarred by the testing of atomic bombs, which is why his final design incorporates what almost looks like keloid scarring, because he is a bombing victim. Mm-hmm. The radiation affected him, and indeed the atomic energy gave him powers in a certain sense, as you know. It's debatable how much of that is present in this film, but as we would go on, that would be the explanation. Mm-hmm. But still, in terms of this version of Godzilla, he is rampaging because he is in immense pain. That is his motivation for moving forward, is just to, you know, he mm-hmm. is suffering. And this is a change from the previous versions, where they sometimes had him eating fish or eating livestock as he roamed through Japan, and instead they just made it, you know, he is...
just rage.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I think that ended up coming back full force in Shin Godzilla, which I believe you saw also.
Yes.
Yeah, so... So it was kind of the hope of the production staff that, you know, as is the case in many, you know, larger-than-life stories like this, that audiences, especially, you know, obviously Japan, could sympathize with the monster, because, you know, he was representing pain. And they also hoped that it would help audience members kind of process any trauma that they hadn't yet dealt with themselves left over from the bombings. And so, on the first day of filming, Honda addressed his crew. He read the script, and he told anyone who was not convinced of the story's quality or depth to leave. as he only wanted dedicated individuals present throughout the filming of, of Godzilla. One of the things I just wanted to cover also, because this is going to be present in all of the movies, but, you know, the use of special effects here. Obviously, Godzilla is famous for the small model towns getting in cities being destroyed by, you know, the monsters represented by people wearing suits, or some combination of puppetry or animatronics or, you know, again, always a combination thereof. So even if later works in this genre would not always go to this, you know, much effort for the filming of this film, again, Suya Baraya, I apologize, did a lot of kind of forced perspective shots using the models depending on where the camera was and, you know, how the buildings would fall and where Godzilla would be positioned, you know, according to them, you know, just to make sure that everything looked, again, as realistic as possible. And originally the plan was to do Godzilla using stop-motion animation, but as far as Toho's staff,
Reggie Bass wasn't available.
They were not, no. But oh god, it is the season.
It is the season.
But that for what the team was planning, that would have taken 7 years, as a generous estimate to get done. So they ended up going with the suit. However, there are a handful of stop motion and puppet scenes in the final product, usually for up close shots of Godzilla's head. And there's also plenty of other small little special effects tricks, like planting sparks and flares inside parts of the models to, you know, as electricity and other things are destroyed. You know, that was, again, it was at the time, this was all fairly revolutionary. As well as Godzilla's contact with electrical wires, I mean power lines, his smoke breath effect and its melting of objects and props and stuff like that was all, you know, that required a little bit of wizardry and animation. So you know, every time we do one of these movies, I'm going to try to give some insight into how the starring kaiju was designed. So this time, of course, we're starting with Godzilla himself.
Oh, he's in this movie.
He is. Yeah, it was difficult to get him, but they got him. He was originally planned to be a gorilla or whale-like.
Watch your terms there.
I recently decorated my Christmas tree with an ooh on top, right where the angel would be.
Right where it belongs.
Or it would be you know, a Godzilla, gorilla-like or whale-like, or a combination thereof. And this might have been reflected in the name Gojira, which is literally just you know, gorilla and, you know, whale, which
combined.
I think was, so they eventually decided to, you know, scrap that phase. They came up with several more designs that varied between being more humanoid or mammalian, and one of which had, like, just a literally, you know, its head was just shaped like a mushroom cloud, which might have been too on the nose. And the final design ended up combining elements of multiple dinosaurs and reptiles, you know, with a few maybe cat-like features left over, which would be carried over to later Godzilla designs, frog, too, in the face. But again, Godzilla would obviously change throughout the years. His roar was also originally going to be just the altered cry of some large animal. And they cooked up a bunch of samples of this, but composer Akira Ifukube, who again is another mainstay with this series, you know, he decided that wasn't getting the job done, so he literally just rubbed a leather glove across the lower strings of a contrabass instrument, and then altered the pitch and speed until the final roar effect was created. And that roar obviously ended up being, you know, iconic.
A little trivia for you. It's the same roar as when, you know, I'm snubbed.
Of course. Mm. Oh.
So if I had been around, they wouldn't have needed this contrabass. Best supporting his glove. Could just use me.
And the Oscar goes to put the speech back in. the Godzilla suit was worn by two individuals, Haruo Nakajima, who again would go on to do many Godzilla movies in this same role, and Katsumi Tezuka, who were both chosen for their strength and endurance.
As they should be.
Well, it was a grueling experience. It was, the suit on the inside was incredibly hot. Mm-hmm. It was cumbersome. It involved many scenes kind of wading through I don't believe it would have been constructed at this point, but Toho for these monster movies had an indoor pool, basically, that would be used for any scenes where a monster is coming ashore or submerging. It was actually a landmark in their studio in Japan until it was torn down, I think, long before Shin Godzilla was filmed. So it's no longer standing. But they might end up rebuilding it as they move back into this method of filmmaking. So he was wading through that. The suit was heavy.
Yes. And hot.
And difficult to see.
Stage lights, Dan.
And there were plenty of instances of, obviously, you know, he was a lot of, like, tripping and falling over. It was very just physically taxing. And Katsumi Tezuka, who was older at the time, you know, he ended up only being able to film a small number of scenes, even fewer of which ended up in the final film because he simply wasn't able to, do the strenuous physical movements. Nakajima himself actually went to, like, local zoos to study how animals moved, and a lot of Godzilla's mannerisms and, you know, his realistic animal-like behavior come from just Nakajima, again, as best he could, inside this suit, giving Godzilla his own, you know, gait, his own style of movement. And there have been, you know, many tall tales surrounding how exactly the name Gojira was created. There was one rumor that it was the nickname of a rather large Toho employee.
Oh, haha. Very funny.
Well, yeah, no, that's like kind of like what happened with Snorlax. Like, yeah. Snorlax is based on a heavyset Game Freak employee.
Oh.
So it might have been that, or that might have just been stagehands gossiping. Other people say that it was Tanaka and Honda just, like, in one of their all-nighter sessions, just someone threw that out there at some point. It stuck, and that ended up as the final version. And there have been many, you know, tongue-in-cheek explanations since then as to how the final name, where it came from. But we know him now, of course, as Gojira, and here in America as Godzilla, yes. Which is just a pretty direct, you know, just...
Mm-hmm. God lizard.
Yeah. Without further ado, I think we can move into the film itself.
Hooray.
Now, when you did the Over the Garden Wall season, keeping with the theme of the show, you asked questions each episode.
I probed into your unknown.
You
did.
You did.
Both on and off the show.
kind of was looking at, you know, the feelings of fall and animation, nostalgia, etc. And I was curious as to how I could do something like special like that for this season. But I know that you do another film podcast, obviously. So
yes.
There was potential that any film related questions I could ask you might not be that fresh.
Mm-hmm.
So instead, I kind of figured we'll go with just sort of a monster mindset question.
Ooh.
Godzilla. He's in pain, and he's suffering, he's angry.
I get it.
He has rage. So, my question is, before we begin, what is a movie, or TV show, or video game that perhaps unreasonably, fills you with the most rage.
Oh my gosh, that fills me with a rage. Master of Disguise, hands Master? Down.
Oh, okay.
It fills me with so much rage as soon as that cherry pie man, that sweet cherry pie man emerges from that pie. I don't care about the Guidi family. I know that's not an Italian name, and yet they want me to think it. I watched that for my other podcast. It was not fun, and the two I was watching it were having a ball of time, but I was livid. So yes, I will name the Master of Disguise as the thing that fills me with the most rage
that,
as of late.
That makes you want to destroy a small model
town. I would destroy the world if I did not have to watch or even think of that movie. If I could get Cherry Pie Man, sweet Cherry Pie Man, out of my brain once again. Or Turtle Man. Oh, God.
Very good. I'm glad you... I was hoping for an immediate answer, yes, and you gave it to me.
My face is red, and I'm angry, and the flames, the side of my face burning.
Good.
Yes. Good. Well, let's get off Monster Island, and let's get into the film, shall we?
You can join us after the jump, folks. Welcome back, folks. We just sat in and watched Gojira,
yes,
a.k.a. Godzilla, a.k.a. Godzilla, King of the Monsters.
Mm.
I have a brief Monster Island Part 2 trivia section.
A return voyage?
Of course, yeah. Mm. Obviously, this one had a bunch more, a lot of going on because this was the first, film in the series. So whether or not we always have to... sections worth of info is, we'll see what happens, but I'll just throw some tidbits in before we get into the plot summary.
Mm-hmm.
Reception-wise, the film originally received lukewarm to negative reviews in Japan. Many critics accused the film of exploiting both the tragedies of World War II and the then-recent Lucky Dragon No. 5 incident, as mm-hmm. we've mentioned. The film also received the, general criticisms that, as we've kept saying, all monster movies were receiving, such as people being angry that, or finding it unrealistic that a giant lizard could breathe fire.
Universe, Dan? Come on.
Not that there was a big lizard, but that the big lizard could breathe fire. So that was seen as absurd and unrealistic. Eventually... Godzilla was given a release in the United States under the title Godzilla, King of the Monsters in 1956. Now, anyone who grew up seeing this version, as this is the version that is almost always played on American television, this was basically a completely different cut of the movie that inserted American actor Raymond Burr into the plot line of the movie. I believe... if I remember correctly, he is a international or American journalist who is sent to cover the events of the movie, from an American perspective, mm-hmm. For the sake of writing a report about it. Mm. So if you watch the version with Raymond Burr, the characters that we come to know over the course of this movie story are kind of made secondary to Raymond Burr's reporter character, who is it's been actually a while since I watched the King of the Monsters version. Cut of it, but I believe it just kind of has Raymond Burr overlap with what we see in the movie. He's present for the Odo Island scenes. He's present for the destruction. He's, I think, actually injured at one point. And he makes passing references to the original plot of the film, mm-hmm. such as, the love triangle that goes on. But he also references being that he's the heretofore unheard of old friend of Dr. Sarazawa, I think, in that version. So again, you're not getting the original story. Mm-hmm. You're kind of getting a almost like a third person perspective on what you know, the movie would cover.
And does he go, this isn't America's fault, and washes his hands of it?
I'm almost, like, if that role isn't played down, I would be surprised if he says it. Like, he might maybe drop a comment about the dangers of, you know, nuclear H-bomb warfare. Testing, because I think it was hard to cut stuff like that, but, you know, the, everything is kind of made to revolve around him. All things considered, though, with this particular movie, since it was much more of a, you know, if you want to attest to it, this movie did have somewhat of like a documentary feel to it.
I put down wartime drama is what I felt.
So of all of the Godzilla movies, you could easily sub out a reporter character to kind of cover these. You know, and you might not be missing a lot, but again, there is a human element and a human plot line to all of this going on the ground level. But, you know, it might be one reason why American viewers and American critics never really missed that aspect. When later movies, not only Godzilla movies, but just general imported kaiju movies from Toho did this, it was sometimes done in a much sloppier fashion. I believe one of the English cuts of Rodan was actually 90% of it was kind of dubbed over with a narrator who explains every single concept. A few of the films that we are going to watch in this series have received cuts like that, but the Criterion Collection again has the original Japanese with, you know, subtitles that we've been watching. When this film was released as Godzilla King of the Monsters, American critics actually, you know, very warmly received it. They praised its, you know, its how it tackled the, you know, the bombings and the horrors of nuclear fallout and things like that. And these assessments by American film critics, which again seem to be overwhelmingly positive, eventually circulated back to Japan. And they prompted quite a few Japanese film critics to start discussing the movie with international, you know, their international colleagues. And their opinions began to gradually change over time until now, you know, obviously Godzilla is seen as a major film milestone in Japan. It is viewed favorably. And Toho has on, I believe... So far, it's gotten two wide theatrical re-releases, you know, that obviously have been very popular. So, I mean, that's kind of where we are with the reactions to it. So we can, if you're ready, we can get into the plot.
Yeah, I assume this plot is mostly from Wikipedia, but I do have notes peppered out. So if we do pause each other, please feel welcome to.
Of course.
So we can add our two cents. I wanted to start with the title crawl and the roars. Just how effective that is, that we hear Godzilla's roar, we're like, ooh, this is a... I like the simplicity of, like, a Japanese title crawl, where it's not, like, not a lot of fanfare. You get the actors, who's portraying who, like, the director and stuff like that, but nothing too overt. It's very simplistic. Yeah. I kind of like how effective that is. We open on a Japanese freighter, and all these sailors are having a musical party together, just living life at sea,
when suddenly... Singing some shanties.
I'm about to come out and do my cabaret number, and then suddenly there's a strange glow from the ocean, and the ocean explodes, taking down this freighter. And, yeah. Eiko Maru.
Yes.
Yes.
And then... In response to this, the company that had dispatched that first ship, or the company that owned that first ship, dispatches a second ship, the Bingo Maru, which meets the same fate with a few survivors.
Yeah, and then we also find out that a fishing boat is from Odo is also sent out to investigate, and it's also destroyed with only one survivor. And we do get, like, the back and forth between, like, the bureaucracy of it all. Like, people are wanting to know, like, are there any survivors? We can't really release that information to the public because we don't know. But that's something that's common even in America here with, like, is the government trying to hide certain things? But in this way, I think the Japanese carry it with a sense of tact that we don't have.
Yeah.
It's also the 1950s, so you would assume that it's a little bit more restricted than it is now. Mm-hmm. But they seem cordial and patient for finding out if loved ones are alive yet.
No, if, you know, in this whole process, I mean, if again, you did see Shin Godzilla, and I know one thing that Hideki Anno went into with that movie, which I think, you know, echoes a lot of what happened in this movie. You know, the bureaucracy and the human emotion that would go on, you know, if disasters like this occur. You know, there are, obviously, there are tons of you know, people, and they're terrified that something's happened, but then you also have bureaucrats who are trying to measure the response.
We've got to plan the committee to research.
Yes, yeah. So, we see shades of that here, but, you know, certainly, you know, I think it's very true to life.
Yeah, and in the fishing village of Odo, they get back their one survivor, but we also find out that fishing catches have mysteriously dropped to zero, and one old dude just sitting there is like, ah, it must be Godzilla, and they talk to this old dude like, no, that's a story you tell children. But then I'm like, well, how does this one guy know about Godzilla? Has he been around before? Is he in the history books? I don't know in this timeline, this canon. And he's like, yes, we used to sacrifice young maidens to Godzilla and do a little dance for him, and it made him happy, and then he stopped attacking us. But if this old man and this town knows about Godzilla, then surely he must be in some historical books of some sort.
Well, it might just be that, like, people were still telling him those stories when he was a kid, and it might not have been done for, like, centuries, but, you know, his parents' generation was still like, oh, we should have been feeding Godzilla a virgin, but we weren't, so he might just be relaying his own fears, but we're not sure how far back the Godzilla history goes. Mm-hmm.
So that evening, a storm strikes the island and destroys reporters' helicopters, and Godzilla is briefly seen. He makes a cameo appearance, but he does destroy some people and some homes and eats some livestock. And the next day we're back, like, you know, talking about the bureaucracy, I assume what's in Tokyo or the capital,
but
where they're discussing what the main issues are, right?
I just want to note that this scene of destruction on Odo Island is probably my favorite in the movie. Mm. I absolutely love this part. It is, you know, we hear the thundering steps of Godzilla coming ashore to destroy the village.
Did you notice it always takes two steps? They're like, the first step, they're like, oh, could be anything. And then the second step, it's, oh, what's that?
As is the fate of many people in obvious horror movies.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's kind of set against this the howling of this storm coming in from the sea. Yeah.
Which is the only thing they do to explain why they can't see Godzilla, because he's so big. They're like, the storm is too intense.
Yeah, he sneaks.
Yeah, he does.
But actually, apparently when this film, when this was being filmed, they were going to have Godzilla appear in a full body shot when he's destroying the village, but they opted not to for the time being to kind of keep the audience in suspense, which is the Jaws method, and I think history has shown that it definitely, I think that's very much the preferable way to do that.
Even a little bit longer if they would have just given us like a tail, a little shimmy. They give us a little head poke, and I was like, oh, all right, there he is.
Yeah, instead they give us I think we see his hip during the village
and
being
what a
destroyed.
Hip. A thick boy he is. Kind of cute.
Mm-hmm.
I kind of find him adorable.
Well, he's
version.
A poppet in some of these.
Just a little poppet. But the Odo residents travel to Tokyo to demand disaster relief, and the villagers and reporters' evidence describes damage consistent with something large crushing the village. They even describe, like, these helicopters didn't fall on themselves. It's almost as if they were crushed from above.
Yeah.
What could have brought that down? And the government sends paleontologist Koei Yamane to lead an investigation on the island, where giant radioactive footprints and a trilobite are discovered in said footprint.
Mm-hmm.
And I do like how they're like, don't use that well, contaminated. And the villager's like, well, what do we do now? And they just walk by.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So it's hard to describe, but I think there's that relationship between the bureaucracy of government and the common people that's always on display in these movies.
Yeah.
And I found it effective, but I think if this would have happened in, like, New Jersey, for instance, I think people would be a lot more pissed off.
Yeah.
And a lot less
They'd be
willing.
Spite drinking the radioactive water, probably,
And saying we're stronger than the radioactivity. But Koei Yanamai discovers this trilobite and says, well, this creature hasn't existed for millions of years.
Yeah, and again, this eventually, at some point, they kind of stop trying to apply science to Godzilla, like as the movies continue, Godzilla is just, you know, he's just there.
Mm-hmm.
But for the time being, we do tend to get these explanations. Oh, he's a creature from the Jurassic era who did this and this and this. But obviously, again, it was a movie in the 50s. People didn't, you know, there wasn't a lot of research.
They still saw a train coming at them in the cinema and they jumped out of their seats.
Yeah, so it was like, you know, I think we now know, you know, I think the T-Rex didn't even exist during the Jurassic. It was Cretaceous, but...
This is a brontosaurus, Dan.
Yes.
Just so you know.
Yeah.
And other dinosaurs.
But the one thing kept consistent, you know, that is part of Godzilla's, you know, canon life now is that his species is some sort of ancient creature that was inhabiting undersea caverns, you know, from a long, you know, distant age that was awoken by all indication, by hydrogen bomb testing, because he's giving off the same radiation that would follow an H-bomb.
Mm-hmm. And there's something more important than this monster going on, Dan. Love itself.
Mm-hmm.
We have the young Imiko and her two lovers, Sarazawa, and then the boy she's kind of into...
Ogata,
What is his name? Ogata?
Yeah, Hideto Ogata.
Ah, okay.
The salvage ship captain.
I did love how they have to shoehorn a love story into these movies.
Yeah.
And she missed out on her Budapest dancers, Dan. And the not the dancers, why am I drawing a blank with this? The place where people orchestra.
Yeah.
There we go. Place where people play instruments. But... we do get this love story, and, I mean, she does constantly faint and scream, but she's mild-mannered nonetheless, and I respect her for it. And she is the daughter of Yamane.
Yes.
And kind of like a research assistant, or just along for the ride, right?
Yeah, so that's how this cast of characters kind of is tangled, you know, they're connected at the moment.
Yeah. And when we do find out, before we find out all this information on Godzilla, he does pose for a little glamour shot over the hill, and he's like, hey guys!
Yeah,
I'm here.
Which is another iconic, I think, moment. Because again, it's the puppet in that part.
It's the
but
Zazu
he's like,
moment, only for us.
Good evening. And then he goes back into the, you know, into the ocean.
Yeah, we see large footprints going into the sea. Where could he have gone, Dan? I don't know. I didn't like how they gendered Godzilla, because in Godzilla 2000, isn't he a she?
In the, what Jonathan is referring to is the
Matthew Broderick
1999 movie made by, Roland Emmerich, I believe, which I disavow.
Yes, well, many on the internet do, too.
Yeah, it was a pretty bad movie, but even that one didn't technically gender Godzilla. Mm. It was still a he, but he...
could lay eggs.
Could...
like a seahorse.
Yeah, spontaneously reproduce all of the dinosaurs in Jurassic Park, because they were ripping off several plot points of Jurassic Park for that. I mean, but that's baggage that I could unpack at a whole nother...
with your therapist later on.
That was just... you know, where to even begin? Mm. But yeah, I mean, however they decide, Godzilla is decided to be a dude, and he stays a dude.
I didn't see a dong on that thing.
I mean, luckily we don't see a dong on that
no
thing.
Dong.
But you know, there's not a lot of representation going on in these movies. I think Mothra is the only one that is confirmed to be a Mothra and Biollante, the plant monster was. I think they were female, but
don't gender our monsters. It's 2019.
I think that's the only one. But even then, Mothra sadly gets replaced by her son for the
son
remainder.
Of Mothra.
So, but we'll cover that bridge when we get to it.
But I did. This was probably my favorite scene in the movie where they're debating on like should we reveal the truth about this creature to the public, and the men. Or, you know, in this case, most of the men are against it, and the women are like, no, we need to know the truth. Like, the public deserves to know. And I like how they're, like, at each other's ends and, you know, trying to fight in the middle of Congress. I like a good dramatic scene like that. And do they decide to reveal? They kind of do, right? Or they kind of don't. It's, like, very vague.
Yeah, no, I think as the weeks go on, like, I think 17 and then up to 20 ships are lost at sea, and then eventually they have to start, like, leaking to the public, like, okay, military is going to be doing this. In this area, do not, you know, ships are advised to show caution, but as we later see with the booze crews, it doesn't get to all of the public, so they might not have. It might have been, you know... kept on, you know, as discreet as possible.
Yeah. So 10 frigates are dispatched to attempt to kill the monster using depth charges. The mission disappoints Yamane, who wants Godzilla to be studied. So we get the classic trope, don't kill the beast.
Don't kill the beast.
Right? We have much to learn from them. And I kind of agree, but at the same time, he's doing a lot of damage and people are just standing around watching him destroy all this. Godzilla survives the attack and officials appeal to Yamane to ask for ideas to kill the monster. But Yamane says that Godzilla is unkillable, having survived H-bomb testings, and must be studied instead. We then get all this Aiko backstory where she wants to break off her arranged engagement to Yamane's colleague, Daisuke Sarazawa.
Well, Dr. Sarazawa, who we mentioned.
Dr. Sarazawa, and she loves Hidetto...
Ogata. Who is one of the... He works at the ship salvage company that lost the ships in the beginning. Yeah. So
he... Ogata basically says, like, you know, you should go over to Sarazawa and break it off kindly. And she agrees. She says, I'll do it before you tell my father tonight. And she goes over there and we meet Sarazawa and he's got an eye patch on. And I'm just... The vault of questions have opened up. Like, did his testing... cause him to lose an eye? Did he
No, he had that from the war.
Oh, the war. Okay.
Yeah, Ogata drops that he feels bad that Sarazawa was had to like been through much like so much crap in his life and that he lost an eye in the war. I think the context of Emiko finally going over there was the Nosy reporter, the Rita Skeeter guy, tries to
I'm looking for a scoop.
Yeah, Sarazawa.
My newspaper is dried and
declines,
much like my legs.
Declines his interview request, so he tries to tag along with Emiko to get as Jonathan said, the scoop.
And I love how he's denied, but then he like forces himself and is like, "Well, maybe if you invite me over."
Yeah.
And Emiko's just like, "Sure, why not?"
And even then he tries to like even trick Sarazawa, like he's like, "Oh, your colleague in Germany says that you're going to reveal this," and Sarazawa's like, "I don't have a colleague in Germany."
I know no
like,
German scientist.
Yeah, so they're obviously, you know. Somehow, maybe one of Sarazawa's past colleagues gave, like, a hint to the reporter, but the reporter is asked to leave once again.
Yeah, and Sarazawa goes to Emiko, and he's like, "I have something to show you in my basement. Come on down, it's a secret just for you and me." She's like, "Sure, why not?" She walks down, it's a laboratory, lots of beakers and burners and such, and tons of fish tanks.
Mm-hmm.
He goes, "I got this thing, it's really trippy, just watch me." And he puts this ball of gold or whatever in this fish tank, and it proceeds to disintegrate the fishes out of existence.
Mm-hmm.
And this is dubbed the Oxygen Destroyer.
Yes.
And he suggests to her that she not reveal this, and she's clearly horrified.
Yeah.
Traumatized by what's going on. And she goes, "No, I won't tell anyone about this. I'll keep this a secret." And she does at first.
Mm-hmm.
She goes home very traumatized, and Ogata asks her, like, "Is anything wrong?" And she's just like, "No, nothing's wrong at all." Enters into the picture very deadpan and just goes to, fetch drinks and dinner for her dad.
And at that evening, Ogata attempts to start to broach the conversation about, marrying her instead.
Mm-hmm.
But he gets into a scuffle with Yamane about, you know, again, letting Godzilla survive. And here, Yamane kind of further starts to imply that he, you know, even besides from being a paleontologist and a zoologist,
mm-hmm.
Yamane would like to apply whatever mechanism Godzilla uses to survive radiation. He might want to see if, like, humans can do that. Like, mm-hmm. we start to see, like, you know, that might be his motivation, but he doesn't fully go into detail about it.
Mm-hmm.
It
results in him saying, like, "Get out of my house.
Out of my house," yes.
Yeah. And then, you know, he turns to Emiko Ogata, and he's like, "I'll try again tomorrow." And Emiko's like, "It's okay."
Yeah.
He's just in his funk. And I do love how Yamane sits in his room in the dark and just gazes at his Stegosaurus statue.
Yeah.
He's like, turn off the lights, dear.
Just like me when I'm facing a crisis.
Yes. Sip my whiskey and just look at the wall.
Turn the lights off, please.
Yes, father.
But, you know, I believe this is when the booze cruise thing happens.
Oh, the booze cruise.
Despite all of the potential dangers, there is a booze cruise in the Tokyo Bay.
I know.
And Godzilla, making his presence known.
Doesn't like the noise. He's like, keep it down, you boozers.
And he makes, shore again. Mm-hmm. And, this time, Godzilla kind of rampages in the area around Tokyo Bay. He attacks Shinagawa and destroys, and another famous scene, he destroys a passing train and, he briefly picks it up in his mouth and throws it back down.
Yeah. And wouldn't these train people know that Godzilla's made land? Surely they have some radios of some sort?
That would probably lend credits to the "we're gonna pretend this isn't happening" fact.
Okay.
Again, I would assume, we do get a little weird shot of, the two train conductor bros.
Just staring.
Like, almost as if we're gonna race past him and not get caught.
No, right?
But then,
we gotta make our stop, come on.
But they do, so it's,
they get smooshed.
So, after destroying this section, Godzilla returns to the ocean, and we do, we have our main characters reacting, and this is a smaller rampage on Godzilla by Godzilla standards, but even then it's horrifying just what he can do in a short amount of time.
And they say, what can stop this big gold lizard boy? We're gonna make an electric wall. We're gonna get some electricity in a fence outside.
Yeah, around Tokyo Bay.
Tokyo, yeah.
To lure him and, hopefully kill him with electricity. Mm. So we get a montage of the, Japanese self-defense forces coming together with all their construction equipment and building this, electric barrier.
Yeah.
And apparently, as another little trivia fact, in the original, I think, maybe it might have been, the second-to-last version of this screenplay, they actually did have the civilians give up on building the barrier. They were going to get, halfway through it, and then, Godzilla would be sighted somewhere, and they would, again, realistically, they would be like, this is stupid.
Because it's
not
only one place, right?
Yeah, and then they would abandon that, and that would, but in the final version, they do complete this.
Godzilla comes back for round two after all this argument and, between our main characters, Ogata wants to marry Ineko, and Yamane is just at home I wish they would study Godzilla. He's a beautiful boy.
So that conflict continues.
Mm-hmm.
Godzilla resurfaces.
This was destructive. This was... Yeah. I don't remember this. This is the only one I think that we're gonna watch besides King Kong versus Godzilla that I've seen, but I saw this when I was really, really young, so I do not remember it. And I know I've seen King Kong more than this.
Of course.
So, because the acting, there's an acting subplot in that movie, and
I
was really drawn to it as a young boy.
No, of course.
As young boys should be.
Yeah.
I didn't remember it being this destructive and going on for this long,
because
Godzilla does a lot of damage.
He does, and they portray it very well.
Yeah.
I think, obviously Godzilla is not fazed by the electric fence and destroys it.
And they're shooting little bullets at him, and it's not doing nothing.
Yeah, it ain't doing shit. I believe when he first served, they're shooting at him with just guns.
Yeah, it's like, what is this?
And it's in one of these scenes, I believe when he's destroying the fence, we get the first shot of Godzilla using his atomic breath in the series. His spines glow, and he exhales what here is represented as kind of a smoke effect, but it is, it is his atomic breath.
It's the only move you use in Destroy All Monsters, because it goes in a straight line, it's all the way across the stage.
That's a quality reference.
Yes, I know.
Good
it's
game.
A good video game.
And apparently, with special effects-wise, these scenes were filmed, by pouring molten plastic over the existing models. And planting, I think, little flares or heat things at different parts of them and then melting them so that, to achieve this effect, which I think is very, well done.
Yeah.
So Godzilla, as Jonathan said, Godzilla begins his ultimate rampage across Tokyo. We get many scenes of him destroying just the infrastructure.
Yeah, burning the orphanage.
Burning the orphanage.
Actors dying and not being calcified.
Yeah.
How many little actors had to die for this scene?
I think many. There were a few stop-motion firefighters,
too.
He's setting the city ablaze. He's destroying tons of buildings. I believe he destroys the main
Capitol
building in Tokyo. And it's interspersed with scenes of, you know, the Japanese Self-Defense Force and local fire departments just helplessly trying in vain to do something to help anybody, but it's not working.
These stupid reporters, Dan. These dumb reporters. I mean, I know they're doing their dignity and their job, and they love to report, and that's their service to their country. But they're like, Godzilla's coming right for our radio tower. It's been fun. Goodbye.
And he's right here. Yeah. I mean, it was a pretty tall ladder.
Yeah.
But
yeah. And Dan wouldn't tell me there's this family on the ground and they're going, we're going to join Daddy soon. I said, Dan, what does that mean? Where'd Daddy go?
You never know when Godzilla's going to fucking sucker punch you there, but he does. It's effective because it's very effective.
I assume Daddy went to the circus and that's where they're going. They're running.
Went out
off
to get some cigarettes. But
yes.
Eventually, I think we're meant to assume that in the, the day after, you know, we get many shots of the hospitals and shelters that are just filled with people who are maimed and dying, in survivors suffering from radiation sickness.
And we see Aiko, wait, what's her name? Emiko, nursing, like, some children who've lost their parents recently.
Yeah. There's a ton of little thing. Like, there's one part where someone is passing a Geiger counter over a kid.
Oh yeah, and they're just shaking their heads back and forth like this kid has no chance.
So again, if you had looked at this scene out of the context of this being a Godzilla movie, this was, you know, it reminds me of Grave of the Fireflies.
Yeah. It's sad that I remember these movies, and I mean, this is the first one. It could be, but I remember them a lot more camp. Some of them, like quirky, funny.
They get there.
Okay, all right. Because I thought I was Jade. I was like, oh no, I'm in for like 8 war pictures now where I have to bring the tissues.
No, believe they certainly get there, and that transition will kind of...
Be abrupt.
I would say we're...
I know Son of Godzilla pops up at some point.
It happens before that. We are, I would say, a solid 3 movies away from when the
camp emerges.
Not even that, when the camp starts to emerge, and then after the 5th movie with King Ghidorah, we go into full camp.
Okay.
And then it goes into the camp ravine and comes slightly back up for the end, and then that's where I'm going to do based on the movies I've chosen, we're going to...
You're going to give us a mix.
I'm going to try to give us a mix. Mm-hmm. But yeah, so we have this the scenes of devastation, and Emiko, you know, just horrified by all this, tells Ogata about Sarazawa's research. Mm. You know, and then we get a expanded version of the previous scene. Well, because we hadn't seen the fishes be disintegrated.
Yeah.
But now we know the nature of it. And also Sarazawa explaining that he was a young scientist, researching oxygen and its properties, and eventually he stumbled across this sort of liquid substance that would destroy oxygen and also pretty much melt any other organic material that came into contact with it. So,
well, he makes it disappear from the movie. It turns to bones, and then they're gone.
Yeah.
So just melt the...
And apparently that is, at the end of the day, the intended effect, because years later, at the end of the Heisei era in the 90s, the last opponent that Godzilla faces in that era is Destroya, who is a mutated Precambrian sort of creature that was brought to life by the chemical in the Oxygen Destroyer. Mm. So it brings that full circle and confronts him. But in that movie, when Destroya is using its powers, you know, there's not really much added to the... It just kind of adds like a little, like electrifying disintegration effect. Mm-hmm. So at the end of the day, they accomplished visually what they wanted, because it, you know, it reduces you to bones.
Yes.
So Ogata and Emiko go to Sarazawa to try to convince him to use the Oxygen Destroyer against Godzilla, but he refuses, explaining that if he uses the device, inevitably politicians and the other superpowers of the world will try to either steal his research or force him to construct more oxygen destroyers for use as a super weapon. Mm. And he, you know, he makes references to escalation and, you know, how countries, you know, certainly by this point in history would have had A-bombs against A-bombs, H-bombs versus H-bombs, and he doesn't want it to become an arms race between things like the oxygen destroyer.
Social commentary, Dan. Yeah. Woo! And the only thing that could snap them out is, oh, the Jonathan Choir.
Yes.
Praying for peace. This young girl school singing a song in their auditorium broadcast over images of the ruin and the chaos going around.
Yep.
Oh, it's the only thing that brings peace to my heart.
Music warms his heart.
Yes, and it melts Sarazawa's heart, and he goes, you two win, but I'm burning my research.
Yeah.
And
I think they kind of, because he says, like, this will be the first and the last time the oxygen destroyer is used. And I think Emiko kind of gets what's going to happen at that point.
Well,
so she breaks down.
Yeah, I guess.
She might
foresee.
Or it might just be the stress of the situation that's like, that gets to her.
It's good drama, though.
So a Navy ship takes Ogata and Sarazawa to plant the device in Tokyo Bay, where Godzilla is resting after his previous attack.
He's standing, resting. My favorite move he does is he does a little over-the-shoulder look.
Yeah. Because I would imagine it would have required several rigs and pulleys to get him to sit in the suit. Yeah. So he's just
standing.
He's under the ocean, standing, leaning against a rock. And his day is about to get ruined, because Sarazawa and Ogata dive down, and they encounter him.
And initially I was like, these two are love triangle, it's going to be smashed to pieces.
No hypotenuse left. No. So, but eventually, you know, I think Sarazawa rigs it so that Ogata gets pulled up early, and then, you know, Sarazawa gets closer to Godzilla with the device and cuts his own support line and oxygen line and detonates the oxygen destroyer.
Yeah.
And Godzilla is engulfed by it. He briefly surfaces to, you know, do one final death knell roar.
Turns to bones and vanishes from the scene.
Defeated.
Yeah. And I liked how they're like, oh, he's gone, let's continue on. But the main characters are like, no, there's a greater issue here.
Yeah.
This could obviously happen again, because we see Yamane is sitting alone, and he's like, there could be other Godzillas if weapons like this persist in the world. So, and I almost guarantee, I think Godzilla may return in some form.
But not this one.
Not this one.
It's a point of confusion, but we actually meet our main hero, Godzilla, next movie.
Oh.
So not many people know that. Not many people realize that. But what the Godzilla that we will be introduced to next week is a completely separate one, who is the one that we will grow with for 14 movies.
Interesting.
So, you know, before I tease that, you know, is there anywhere folks can reach you?
You can find me at LosingMyMindJK on Instagram, DrinkAndReadJK on Twitter. You can follow my other movie/drinking podcast, Nightcaps at the Theater. Recently, we just gave it a moose boosh. We had that Bedknobs and Broomsticks episode. We're coming at you with one more, our end of the year recap, and then maybe a Christmas surprise or two. I'll never tell.
Snow in South Dakota.
Yes, but perhaps. No, who's ever heard of such a thing?
And just as always, you can reach me at King_Danis for where I post artwork in tandem with our podcast Instagram account, which definitely needs some love. So if you want to follow that,
I can't draw.
That would be great.
That's your job.
No, of course. But I'm telling the viewers or the listeners.
Unless you want me to sketch a stick figure of sorts. Who could imagine on Instagram?
But, you know, I hope that so far everyone has enjoyed this introduction to the Godzilla canon.
I have. I'm learning a lot.
So, that being said, if I can give you a little preview for next week, ultimately, Dr. Yamane's words come to pass, and a second Godzilla does indeed rise from the depths.
My God.
But this time, he's not alone on the block of trying to destroy Japan, because he faces a prehistoric rival named Anguirus. Mm-hmm. Will he be able to defeat this monster? Will he be defeated? Or will their battle destroy Japan itself? Find out next week when we watch Godzilla Raids Again. Mm.
Are you a prehistoric creature, spurned to rampage and ravage the land due to your personal rage at humankind? If you are, or even if you aren't, why not tune into the latest season of Anime Was Not a Mistake? For this season, resident kaiju expert Dan Ryan takes young, naive anime fan Jonathan under his wing as we take a retrospective journey through the nuclear fallout of some classic Godzilla films. If you like what you hear as you listen on Podbean, iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, and more, then why not join in the relief effort by supporting us on Instagram at Anime Was Not a Mistake Podcast or on Facebook at Anime Was Not a Mistake Pod. Only through your continued efforts can we truly decide if this king of the monsters is a beast or just misunderstood. Sayonara, human and kaiju alike.